Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. Deck the Halls, the voice of Kathleen Battle. It's a selection of our guest, Lyndon Terracini of Opera Australia, the artistic director. Lyndon, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here, John.
Lyndon, Kathleen Battle represents one of the great voices of opera, but she's one of those who, like many these days, seem to want to move slightly away from her centre into a little musical comedy and other things as well.
Yeah, look, quite a few singers do that, and she, in fact, did venture into a lot of, religious music, and both she and Jesse Norman sang at this extraordinary festival in Fez that's devoted to religious music from all over the world. They were both on different years. They were the guest artists there, which seemed quite a strange thing, but she sang there, and then the following year Jesse Norman sang some big Negro spirituals in that festival.
Spirituality seems to underline so much, even of contemporary music, even though perhaps a generation ago we've lost the roots, whether they be through church music or whatever. There is still an underlying power there that comes through.
Absolutely, and I mean, I think in a lot of music making, and particularly, you know, when you're a performer, there are certain times when the music really speaks to you in a different way, and you do find that there is a special something, and it may be spirituality, it may be a moment in time. But I remember when I was very young and I was singing the Lord's Prayer. There's a wonderful arrangement of it. There were one or two performances then when something really special happens and you do feel some sort of very strong connection.
Music, more than any other art form, brings that up. I mean, people talk about it in poetry and other things, but for music there is a special connection. What for you, when for you did you actually realise that music was something visceral for you, and it was more than just performing what your mum and dad wanted you to perform, and more than just having fun, that there was something there that really connected deeply for you?
Well, I think it started when I was very young, and as you know, I grew up in the Salvation Army. There were, at that time, there were some pretty extraordinary brass bands and choirs that were part of that Salvation Army movement, and I remember being in Salvation Army Citadel Hall in North Sydney, and the band was playing, and I remember being tremendously touched by the power of the music, and that's really never left me. Whether it's a brass band, and I still feel very, very emotional when I do hear a brass band playing Christmas carols or hymn tunes, and even now with when I'm at the opera, I get very emotional during performances. But it was, I suppose, too, when I was young and started playing brass instruments in the Salvation Army, at Christmas time we would go out and play Christmas carols. And people would come out of their houses and they were genuinely pleased to see you there and enjoyed hearing that music in front of their own house in the street. And I always thought that was a really wonderful thing, and I enjoyed doing it enormously. But I think a lot of people derived a great deal of joy from the fact that the Salvation Army Band was outside of their place playing Christmas carols.
Let's take you back, perhaps not quite that far, but to a place we can remember. Here's the Camberwell Band of the Salvation Army, O Little Town of Bethlehem. O Little Town of Bethlehem. A selection from the Salvation Army and a reminder of things past for Lyndon Terracini, the Artistic Director of Opera Australia. Lyndon, let's talk about that for a moment, because I, like you, shared those marching down the streets with the Salvo Band, and you felt odd at times about this, but Christmas you never did, because people just came out of their homes wanting to be part of it, and there was something about an Australian Christmas, because it was warm. And kids would stand on the lawns in their bare feet, or there would be a hose running and sprinklers going, and people would bring you out drinks and things like that. I mean, there's a sense of community there.
Look, it was a tremendously special time, and I agree with you. There were times, you know, when you're a young man wearing the Salvation Army uniform, you felt a bit peculiar. But Christmas was very different, and it seemed that there was a great desire for people to come out of their houses. The Salvation Army band was playing, isn't it terrific? And as you said, they'd bring you a drink. It was warm. It was either, you know, early in the morning or later in the evening. We used to go around and do it as well. And there was this sense of community. And I remember that a similarity to that I had was when I first went to Italy to sing in 1976. I was singing at this big festival in Montepulciano. And there was, within that opera that Hans Werner Henze had written, there was a section for a local band. And the whole community came out, and in the big first aria that I was singing, I had an entrance where I had to ride this sort of scooter up a big ramp and jettison it, then land in a haystack. And all these kids ran out of the audience to see if I was okay. And it was a similar sort of feeling. There was a great joy about enjoying a performance. And in all sorts of ways, with the Salvation Army in those days, they really were performances, but people were so connected to it. And they'd ask for favourites, you know, oh, can you play O Come All Ye Faithful? Oh, that sounds great. You know, can you play Silent Night? And we'd go through our whole repertoire. But it was a great feeling, I guess, of Christmas. It was a great Christmas spirit.
Our guest this Christmas special is Lyndon Terracini from Opera Australia. Lyndon, your career has ranged enormously. You mentioned your start with the Salvation Army, but then I guess you first broke through with contemporary opera with Wozzeck. You were associated with that performance many years ago, then working overseas for so many years. You've come back to Australia and you're now working at what some would see as the pinnacle. And many have said to you, well, what do you bring to this? What are you going to say to Australians and their connection with opera and community music making at a time when a lot of these things are under threat? There seem to be audiences drift. Television has taken over so much. And it's both about participation and performance. It's both about the audience and the singers. You've set yourself a pretty gigantic task here. Now, I took the trouble to read a little bit about the one or two things you've observed recently, and you made an observation that you'd like to see the way we approach, say, funding a thing like Opera Australia as a three-part thing, part audience, part government, part sponsorship. Some people say, that's a risky ambition. Your programming has to be tailored to meet that sort of thing. How do you approach a task like this?
Well, it's interesting, and I think, and I've said to a number of people, that everything I've done in my life has actually been preparation for this position without realising it at the time. And so that ranges from, you know, the very early beginnings with the Salvation Army and connection to community and so on. And so with Opera Australia, what I've tried to do, and I've said this again quite publicly, is to play to as many people as we can, because I feel that in a democratic society, everyone should have the right or the privilege to be able to have access to everything that we're doing. And so with the Handa Opera on Sydney Harbour that we did this year for the first time, we had a fantastic response. 41,000 people came over 18 performances, and 60% of those people who bought tickets had never been to the opera before. And we've since seen that in other productions that we've done at the Sydney Opera House, they've started to buy tickets there. In fact, this year we sold more tickets to our performances than the company has ever sold in its entire history in a year. So obviously, I'm very happy about that. And with things like South Pacific, that, you know, you could, well, I feel, is actually an opera in that it tells a story that's driven by music and text. And it's, while it's a musical that, or was called a musical that was first performed in 1949, it still has a tremendous amount to say to us in 2012 as contemporary Australians. It's set in the South Pacific. We live in the South Pacific. The way it addresses interracial marriage and how people react to that, I think, has a lot to say in terms of the different ethnic demographic that is making up Australia's East Coast cities now. And so there was a very, very powerful response from the audience. Not only did a huge number of people come, but the reaction they had to the piece was very different to, I think, what it has been before. And so with that, and then also the work that we've been doing with community choirs in Sydney, started these choirs in various parts of the western suburbs, and Simon Kenway went out and taught people to sing operatic choruses, and then we invited them to all come in and join together. We had about 400 of them in the concert hall of the Sydney Opera House on a Sunday afternoon, and they got to sing with the Australian Opera and Ballet Orchestra and some of our soloists, and they invited their friends and relatives. And many of those people had never been into the Sydney Opera House before. And it was a surprisingly emotional event where people were in tears. They could see their members of their family in the audience, and the people in the audience could see their relatives on stage singing. And I have to say, singing wonderfully well. It was quite surprising. And my colleagues from Opera Australia who came were also, too, very emotional about that event. It was a genuine connection to community that we hadn't done before, and I guess people would be surprised, or some people would be surprised, that we, that an opera company would be doing something like that. Similarly with the production we did in Yarrabah in far north Queensland, an Indigenous community, and we did a piece with them, went into the community and worked with them because they wanted to tell their story through music. They wanted an opera about Yarrabah. Well, we ended up calling it Yarrabah the Musical, but it was an extraordinary event in that a similar sort of reaction occurred, in that people were tremendously emotional. They were cheering and crying at the same time because there was their story on stage for everyone to see. And it's been a particularly difficult time for that community through history, like many Indigenous communities. And I think for them to have what they wanted out of that piece, and that it was really a very positive story rather than being negative in many sorts of ways, was particularly pleasing for them. But at the same time, to see the experiences that they'd gone through happening on stage was also very emotional. So I guess it's really redefining what an opera company is, and particularly what an opera company means to the culture of Australia. And for me, it's very different to what an opera company may have been traditionally known as. That doesn't say we won't continue to do opera, and of course we do, and we try to do it at the very highest level. But we also want to do a lot of other things so that we can connect with as many people in as many places as we possibly can.
This is a challenge at every level. You've painted a very broad picture, yet for those who've grown up within the tradition of serious classical training, there is an enormous gulf between Verdi and Rodgers and Hammerstein. I mean, the way you produce the sound is different. Your attack on the lyrics is different. How do singers rise to this challenge? I mean, we mentioned Kathleen Battle, but you've also got people like Kiri Takanawa who have crossed over with things like West Side Story. Now, sometimes they can do it and sometimes they can't.
Absolutely. I think the fundamental reason behind choosing something like South Pacific is the fact that it was written, the role of Emile de Beck was written for Ezio Pinza. And at the time, he was, I guess, the leading bass or bass baritone in the world. He was certainly the leading bass at the Metropolitan Opera in New York. So the music was written specifically for him, so that an opera singer like Teddy Tahu Rhodes, for example, can sing it very easily, because he actually hasn't got to do anything differently. He may be singing in English rather than a foreign language, but you know, most singers can do that. And so he actually sings the same way as he does in an opera. The other members of the cast, for the other members of the cast, rather, it's very, very different. And they come from a very different background. They sing in musicals. Lisa McCune, for example, was wonderful. Eddie Perfect, Kate Sobrano, Dan Cook. And so they brought their particular expertise to the piece, and Teddy sang the way he usually sings. So it's that combination that I think merits Opera Australia doing a piece like that. We're not going to do a lot of the musicals that you may see in other theatres, like Legally Blonde or Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, for example. But we may, and we will, do musicals that have a very clear connection to an opera company or to a particular style of singing that relates to operatic singing.
And, of course, music for the stage has helped in that it is moving back towards the full musical production. If you start, say, with Jesus Christ Superstar and end up now with Les Mis, you're looking at a far more operatic approach.
Well, exactly. I mean, Les Mis is tremendously operatic, not only its writing, but it's in the way it's performed. And it's very emotional too. And that is very much the essence of what opera is.
The other thing, of course, is the staging. And one recalls, if you're in Sydney over the last 12 months or so, seeing that, that wonderful reconfiguration of the Magic Flute.
Well, exactly. And again, it's really finding a way to play to a lot of people who haven't come to the opera before. And Julie Taymor, she's obviously extremely talented. But we found with that production of Magic Flute, more people came to see it than any other production of the Magic Flute that the company has had. And a lot of them were young people, and a lot of them came from a very different ethnic demographic. Now, I wish I could take the credit for that and say, yes, I planned that, but I didn't. It happened by accident. I mean, I thought a lot of young people would come, and they did, and certainly at a lot of performances, it was full of kids. And I can't remember who said it, but someone said the most beautiful sound in the world is the sound of children laughing. And that was the case at a lot of those performances of Magic Flute. And then at the end of a show, when you saw them running down to the front to try and get close to the performers and the musicians, it's a wonderful sight. And it's a tremendous thing for not only the operatic form, but also for people to feel that they can come into a theatre and derive that much joy out of a performance that perhaps they were completely unaware of before they'd walked through the door of that theatre.
Let's have another piece of music now, and we'll stick with Australia for the moment. We've been talking about Opera Australia, but of course Australian musical life is rich in all sorts of directions, and one of the most successful over recent years has been the a cappella jazz ensemble The Idea of North. They've just released a Christmas album, and here's a delightful number from that album. It's the Australian Carol by W.G. James. The Silver Stars Are in the Sky. From Bach, from the St. Matthew Passion, the great chorale, O Sacred Head. normally associated with Easter. Tonight, a selection of our guest, Lyndon Terracini of Opera Australia. Lyndon, we've been talking about Australia and the sorts of things that communities want and desire. We've also talked about the sorts of things that you're bringing to the job. One of the things you bring is a depth of understanding, not just about opera and performance, but about organising festivals. I mean, you were in Brisbane for some time, and you've already given an indication that showbiz has to be a part of this. We have to be where the people are.
Mm. Yeah, I think festivals are a great tool to bring people together. And again, going back to the Salvation Army, we used to have harvest festivals and all that sort of thing.
We had programs and festivals every Saturday night.
We did, that's right. They became a bit exhausting at one stage. But again, when I was in Italy for the Montepulciano Festival, when I was very young, that was an incredible festival that Hans Werner Henze organised, where people actually came together. They came together to make music. They came together to celebrate, to have a wonderful time. And I think within an opera company, you can create seasons that are rather like festivals. And it may have a particular theme, like Mozart this year, for example, and Verdi next year. But it's really trying to find a central meeting point so that people can celebrate a particular area of music or a particular area of their daily life. And festivals have been common throughout history. There was when we were living in Italy, there was the festival of the Torchio. They had a big wine press that was massive, and people would bring their grapes. It's October the 14th or somewhere around there. Bring their grapes every year, and this massive wine press would work, and so they would then take the liquid home and do whatever they did to it to make it into particularly undrinkable wine. But nevertheless, it was the ritual of coming together which was so special, and I think festivals have the power to do that. And if we can find that methodology within an opera company season to have these special events that are rather like festivals, then it seems to be helping people focus on particular areas that they may be interested in.
Well, we've already seen your success, as you've already alluded to, from the last New Year's special, which almost became a festival on Sunday. It was part of the touching off the beginning of the Sydney Festival, really. And that just seemed to play right. For people who were around town, it was the big event to go for, and yet it maintained a popular touch. It wasn't elitist, and a very successful event too.
Yeah, I think that's the difficult balance to find. If you can make sure that the work that you're doing has tremendous integrity, but also has the capacity to appeal to a large number of people, then that's absolutely the perfect balance.
You've spent some time in Italy, and you've spoken much about Italy. Let's take a composition from Italy, from the great Italian patriot, Verdi, from the Requiem, the Dies Irae. Now, this is another odd selection for this season of the year. How did this spring to mind?
Well, I think it first started when we used to have wonderful Christmases in Italy, when Australians from all over would come and have Christmas at the house. And, you know, I've always loved the Verdi Requiem, and the Dies Irae particularly is tremendously powerful. And after you've had a few courses, and of course you've had some wonderful bottles of wine.
Something from Montepulciano.
Exactly. It's a very good Vino Nobile from Montepulciano. It's terrific to hear such powerful, exhilarating music, and also, of course, in the middle of it, not only is there this great chorus, but there's tremendous brass playing, and I always love hearing great brass players as well. But it's the exhilaration of this piece, particularly the second half, that I find so wonderful.
The Dies Irae from Verdi's Requiem, a selection of our guest, Lyndon Terracini, Artistic Director of Opera Australia. Lyndon, the opera's been associated with Sydney and Melbourne. The government, 30 years or so ago, established the Australian Ballet in Melbourne and the opera in Sydney, and you've moved between both. The rest of Australia gets to see a little more of you these days, but not as much as they would wish. What are your ambitions for the rest of the country? You've already mentioned the recent exercise in going out into communities, but do you see yourself extending your interest?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we did do a season in Brisbane this year at QPAC, and look, I hope we can go back more often to do that. It was great being able to have Opera Australia in Brisbane, and I know that the audiences that came enjoyed it tremendously. It's difficult because of the size of Australia to take the entire company to Perth and even to Adelaide. But it would be nice to feel that on special occasions we could do that. We do have a smaller part of Opera Australia called Oz Opera that we tour throughout country towns and centres, and it's been tremendously successful. We send an orchestra with it. We did Don Giovanni this year that was directed by Michael Gower, a wonderful production. And we had some terrific singers in it, and I went out to a few places to see it. We did La Traviata in Alice Springs and all through the Northern Territory and so on. And that company is on the road, most of the year in different states. And people appreciate that very much. And it's also particularly enjoyable for the singers and the musicians who go on those tours. And often when you're young and you do have the opportunity to go on the road in a show like that, it's great fun, but it's also very important in a singer's development, in that you actually learn what it's like to be on the road playing three or four times a week. And so you need to make sure that you know exactly what you're doing technically from a vocal perspective. That sort of experience you can't buy. And for people to have that opportunity to do that, and for people in regional Australia to hear some of the fabulous young singers who are really developing and doing tremendously well, it's tremendously exciting. And I must say, when I do go out and see those performances, it's a great thrill to see people doing so well and to see audiences enjoying it so much. And we also play in schools. Each year we play to about 80,000 school children. We take different pieces into schools, and that has a tremendous response. And I don't get to a lot of those performances, but I've been to a few of them in recent times, and to see how involved the kids are and how fascinated they are by it can be quite surprising, but it's a very rewarding experience too.
Our guest this Christmas special program is Lyndon Terracini, the Artistic Director of Opera Australia. Lyndon, we're rapidly running out of time. We're going to just fit one or two more songs in. Here's something from the United States. It's a carol that was written in the midst of the Civil War in the United States, an unusual setting for a carol. It's written by one of the great poets, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. I heard the bells on Christmas Day their old familiar carols play. But if you listen to the second verse, it reminds us that that hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men. The power of lyrics are inextricably linked to the power of music, particularly in opera. And there have been some great lyricists. I mean, Mozart's lyricists are famous. But the power of words and music, and I guess you'd get that out of your own tradition of hymnody in the Salvation Army as well.
Yeah, I mean, when the text is actually being illuminated by the music, it's an extraordinary thing, and that combination is phenomenal. There's the great song that Cable sings in South Pacific too. You've got to learn how to hate. You've got to be told that if people are different to you, then if they have different shaped eyes or different coloured hair, you've got to be told that. You've got to learn how to hate. It's tremendously powerful, and that sort of combination of words and music, there's nothing like it, and that provokes emotions in people that I guess is what defines the great joy and tragedy and emotion of what music and text is about.
Harry Belafonte, I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day.
I heard the bells on Christmas Day. They're old familiar carols play, and wild and sweet.
This special Christmas program, our guest is Lyndon Terracini of Opera Australia. Lyndon, we're almost now finished, but we do have to turn to one other piece of music. Now, we've got to talk a little about this. Adeste Fidele is probably the definitive Christmas song, but you've selected a performance by Jan Pierce, which I had a deal of trouble in digging out. Eventually, I found it on an old piece of vinyl that had been lost to the world since 1966. This must have some resonance for you.
It does, and I think I wore my copy out. Jan Pierce was a tenor at the Metropolitan Opera in New York, a very fine tenor. Toscanini's favourite tenor, in fact, when he was at the Metropolitan. And he used to be a Jewish cantor before he became a leading tenor. And I just love the way he sang this. And there's a real earthy quality to his voice. There have probably been more beautiful voices, but Jan Pierce had something really special. And then later I used to sing this with various Salvation Army bands. Probably not as well as Jan Pierce, but nevertheless, I enjoyed it enormously. And at Christmas, I would always play Jan Pierce singing this.
Jan Pierce, a man with very big lungs. Adeste Fidelis. Lyndon Terracini, it's been great to have you with us for this special Christmas program on ABC Radio.
It's been a great pleasure, John.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. You can download your favourite Sunday night interviews from our website at abc.net.au/Sunday Nights with an S. Thank you for listening.